This is Total Information AM with Tom Ackerman. I'm Megan Lynch. Fact checkers working overtime as we enter the final days before the November presidential election. How do you make sense of all the information that's coming at you? Well, with us now, Julie Smith, Webster University instructor and media expert. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you bet.
It's hard to keep up with everything that's happening.
Well, it's like trying to get a drink out of a fire hose. The content is so much and it's so divisive that it's really hard to process all of it sometimes.
I have election fatigue, I will tell you right now. I mean, we do the news, but when it comes to social media, if I'm scrolling on X, it's like one after the other,
it's brutal. Yeah, and there's a lot of things happening at once, right? We have the ability to create things that look like news ourselves, and so do other countries. And trust in the traditional or mainstream media is at an all-time low. And we get so much information from the social media platforms where we tend to congregate with people who think, feel, believe, and vote the way that we do, right? And plus, it's controlled by the algorithms, not necessarily who we follow. And those are economically driven. So there's a lot of things happening at once that really, it just makes it more necessary than ever to have our antennas up.
Educate us on the difference between spin, misinformation, and disinformation.
Okay. Misinformation is just a mistake. Like the Post-Dispatch would probably have a little paragraph on page 2, corrections from the previous day, right? If you all have a factual error, you correct it. You are publishers. That's misinformation, and it happens regularly because you have to feed the beast, right? You're on air 24 hours a day. Disinformation is a mistake that's done on purpose. It's designed to be misleading. And then there's something called malinformation, which is information that's incorrect, that's designed to harm. Spin has a bad rap. I think spin in one definition would be just describing something from a different point of view. You know, when Michael Brown was killed, he was described as an unarmed black teenager by one outlet, and he was described as a 6'4", 230-pound robbery suspect with marijuana in his system by another outlet. And both of those were true. It just depends on the word choices that we use and the point of view we use.
Where does disinformation come from?
A lot of places. The New York Times this week has a piece that claims that most of the disinformation we see on social media platforms comes from China and Iran and Russia. What they do is create messages that look like they're organic, and they're meant just to stir things up and keep us mad at each other.
And we're going to be talking about that with Ian Schur at 9:20. So that very report from Microsoft. When we look at how much mis and disinformation we are getting right now during this election cycle, a lot of people are saying it's the worst it's ever been. Is that the case?
Well, it always feels like it, doesn't it? And like, Tom, I have election fatigue, too. In fact, I'm thinking about a media blackout on election day just because it's going to be an onslaught of information. One thing we have to remember, especially during breaking news and big events, is that that's when we're less likely to check things for authenticity. That's when we get really excited and we share stuff that we probably shouldn't be sharing. It feels like there's more than ever, I think, because we have so many outlets for information now. You know, years and years ago, we had the radio and TV and newspapers, but now we have thousands of options for our information, which is a feature and a bug.
Where are the best places to fact check? What are the best resources?
You mean like a fact check site or what I recommend people do on their
own?
What I recommend is to do due diligence, right? We call it lateral reading. So if you see something on X, Tom, and it seems kind of fishy to you, go to the KMOX site, go to Associated Press, go to CNN, go to Reuters. Find out if what you saw on X is really happening, because if it's only one person on X talking about it, it's probably not true. So that's lateral reading. That's a really good source. Also, look for links to actual stories. Look for stories where people put their name behind them. There's something going viral now that originated in Russia. It's a picture of Jennifer Aniston, and the quote at the top says, "It's time to forget about Ukraine." And it's presented to look like Jennifer Aniston said that, but there's no quotation marks, right? It's just an image of her with this sentence. And a lot of people might go through their messages so quickly. I think, what did I read? Like, we scroll like 30 centimeters every 10 seconds or something crazy. we go through information so quickly, we might see that we think Jennifer Aniston is anti-Ukraine, so we don't check it.
Let's turn to public opinion polls, because I heard another one from Wall Street Journal today measuring the presidential rate. What is some of the information that voters have to sift through when they hear results of an opinion poll?
I think you want to ask, how big was the sample? Who did they ask and how? You know, if you're doing a poll with landlines, you're probably only going to get older people. And if you're doing a poll with cell numbers, usually people don't answer the phone. But if you're doing an online poll, your only audience is the people who are on your website at that time. So you want to ask who the source is, how big the sample is, and how those questions were written. Because in many cases, you can tell who has sponsored the poll by the way that the question is written. It's a leading question.
Can we go back and look at past elections and see how accurate those polls were? Are we able to do that?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, yesterday I saw something that a lot of the polls in 2016 were wrong, and a lot of the polls in 2020 were wrong. And I'm just not sure why they're newsworthy, really. Because I don't know if we can really put a ton of stock into them.
Now, I will say, for example, the SLU YouGov polls that we talk about a lot on KMOX, they do publish all of their questions.
I love that.
Yeah, you can see everything they've asked, and they actually consult with a lot of people in writing those questions and making sure that they are as neutral as possible.
And that transparency makes me want to believe that poll more than anything else.
But you mentioned with today's technology, it's harder and harder to get an accurate sample, right, of people.
Right, right. You know, if you get a sample of people at a mall on a Friday morning, it's going to be mainly senior citizens, right? I mean, you have to try to get the most random sample. Also, you want to try to get likely voters, because that helps kind of figure out where the undecideds are going to go. I would recommend beware of any polls that use the word like stunning or shocking or anything to try to pull you in with emotion. That's usually a red flag that it was designed just to do that exactly.
Interesting. What other advice would you give to navigate these next 10 days or whatever it is? I mean, aside from listening to KMOX 24/7, you should definitely do that. But how do you navigate the media here, just to summarize, before Election Day?
Well, I think it's the five big questions, right? We're consuming 11 and a half hours a day of electronic mass media every day. Who's the sender of these messages? What's their motive or intent? How's the message designed to get my attention? What information is left out, and who benefits or profits from this? These are objective questions to ask about every message, and it really kind of helps us be more in control of the information that we're swimming in for the next 10 days.
Julie, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
You bet.
That is Webster instructor, media literacy expert, Julie Smith, joining us this morning. And